Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And I think there's nothing more evolutionary than the understanding that we are not alone, that we're part of a great, our cosmic family, if you will. There's an environment of consciousness that permeates the universe that I'm pretty sure is happening. And that's why I want to talk to tonight's guest, Kathleen Martin. Kathleen will be one of the keynote speakers at the upcoming Contact in the Desert, which is happening May 19th to the 22nd, 2017 in Joshua Tree, California. You get tickets at contactinthedesert.com. So, hi, Kathleen. Nice to talk to you again.
Hello, Alan. Nice to talk to you as well.
And what I love about you and who you are is that you are a direct link to the Betty and Barney Hill case. I mean, there's no one closer to that than you. So
is correct.
It is, because Kathleen was Betty's niece, Betty's mother. Kathleen's mother was Betty's sister. And are there new facts emerging in that really landmark case, if there ever was one, that was it? Or is it sort of, it's all out now about Betty and Barney Hill?
Well, I can't say that it's all out in the public yet. I had to limit my book, Captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, to 90,000 words. Mm-hmm. I had actually written 120,000 words. Wow. And had to condense it and remove some information from it. There is far more. They met many, many interesting people in the Air Force, in the Navy, scientists, and conducted many experiments as well. So I am constantly researching their case. It's been going on for years and years.
Right. I mean, it was so important. First of all, they were the first people to really come forward with the idea that abductions existed at all. And that broke ground for so many people to follow. You know, the strange thing was, I was like, I don't know, 8 years old, and our family would get Look magazine, and I read that article, and I just knew it was true. It was creepy. I mean, it just kind of planted a seed in my mind to what was happening. As far as like that public awareness, how did they feel about that exposure when the articles came out in the book, Interrupted Journey?
Well, let me tell you first a little bit of background on this. Betty and Barney had always intended to keep this secret because of their status in the state of New Hampshire. Betty was a social worker for the state. Yes. He was also very active in the civil rights movement, as was Betty. He was a member of the NAACP, legal redress for the NAACP section on the seacoast of New Hampshire. He was also on the regional board. In 1965, he was appointed to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission's State Advisory Committee. He had also worked through the Office of Economic Opportunity to set up the Rockingham County Community Action Program, and for that, he received an award from Sergeant Shriver. Mm-hmm. So he and Betty were very active in the community and in the state. They worked on voters' rights, on literacy program during the time frame when people had to pass a literacy test in order to vote. Mm-hmm. So they did not want to be known mm-hmm. as abductees or even to be associated with UFOs in any way as far as the public was concerned. Mm-hmm. They'd talked to Air Force officers, Navy officers, scientists. They told their friends, but it was the result of a violation of confidentiality that mm-hmm. brought their story to the public in October of 1965, mm-hmm. when a Boston, Massachusetts newspaper reporter received information from a friend of Betty's who violated confidentiality. And he took that information and then went to Pease Air Force Base officers, spoke to them. He interviewed 12 to 14 people in upstate New Hampshire who had also seen the object that night. And he talked to many, many other people as a result of this violation. So he had contacted Betty and Barney. They said, no dice. We'll lose our jobs. We'll lose our standing in the community. And he reassured them that if he would, they would talk to him, he would never publicize it in any way. It was for his own information. But they refused to speak with him. And based upon hearsay, and I remember what happened after that was released. Betty and Barney went to my grandparents' home, and I grew up across the street from my grandparents in Kingston, New Hampshire. And we had a family meeting. They were extremely distressed over this. But at the family meeting, we decided that the best thing to do would be to go forward with the story now, because it wasn't entirely accurate as it was presented in the Boston newspaper.
Well, that, yeah, so I know that must have been, because it's still, even now, what is it, like 50 years later, it's still controversial. I mean, the whole idea that such a thing can happen, it's still so far outside the public's awareness that it must have been really, you know, very extreme back then. But I did what I, my theory was that, you know, about Betty and Barney Hill being an interracial couple, that perhaps they were abducted by aliens because maybe they would have less fear or prejudice about meeting an alien race since they were interracial. Does that make sense to you, or is that just
You know, that idea has been presented to me in the past, and I've given a lot of thought to that. And I'm thinking that as if I were an alien and I looked down into this vehicle that was traveling in a desolate area in upstate New Hampshire during the off season, and I saw a man and a woman in that vehicle and getting out of that vehicle, and a dog, and the woman had black wavy hair and the man had black curly hair, and his skin was a little bit darker than hers, I'm not sure that they would even be aware of the racial differences that we have seen as a result of our cultural history.
Right. No, that's a good point, and you might, and it's probably true, but it does seem like they do target specific people. I mean, that's been my experience as probably having my own abductions, that they're, it's like whether they were interracial or not doesn't matter, but they weren't just traveling alone on a road and were spotted. It seems to me that abductees are tracked. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think it's true, but we do not know if Betty or Barney ever had an abduction experience prior to September 20 or 1961. So that's something that would only be speculation. And there's been so much speculation about this case already. I hate to add to it.
Right. You know, what was really exciting for me was last summer, I went to Lincoln, New Hampshire, and saw the sign that the state of New Hampshire posted there, officially recognizing, you know, that incident as a reality. How did that come about, that the state of New Hampshire actually, you know, came forward and said, this is the site of Betty and Barney Hill's abduction? I think it's a real milestone within the UFO community that that happened.
I agree, and I'm very proud of that. After Betty died in 2004, a man from New Hampshire contacted me with the idea, and he was sending around a petition that he wanted signed. And so he and I then approached the New Hampshire Historical Society's Historical Marker Committee. And we presented a proposal. And then they asked me to write the text that would go on the sign. And I had to provide to them about 25 sources of information to prove that everything that I stated was true. So it was a very long process. At one point, I wondered if they would ever approve it. But in 2011, shortly before the 50th anniversary of the Hills event, Marker was erected in Lincoln, New Hampshire, in front of the Indian Head Resort. I was very pleased with that.
And thank you so much. I mean, I didn't know how involved you were, but that I don't know. It just brought another level of reality to me, not just about their case, but about all cases involved. I think, you know, more people should recognize the historical significance of that sign. And
yes, and I also set up a historical or an archival collection for the Hills at the University of New Hampshire, Betty's and my alma mater. And so that is there for anyone who wants to visit their archival collection.
What's
artifacts are there. Like the dress Betty was wearing.
You mean the torn dress that she had on at the time is there?
Yes, it is there.
Wow.
And it's being preserved in the archival collections library, which is inside the Diamond Library at the University of New Hampshire in Durham, New Hampshire.
What else tell us, what else is there?
Along with the Air Force records, many files from the collection of files that Betty had in that time frame, the original reports, Marjorie Fish's work on the star map. There is a great deal of information there. Also, Betty had a bust of the leader, the one that she called Junior when she had the bust made. And that is there, along with some other artifacts, including some information about their involvement in the civil rights movement.
Yeah, no, I've heard about that. So anyone can go into the university and look at this collection?
Yes, they can go in and request it. I think that they might have to request it in advance, but it can be viewed by the public.
You know, Betty is a very interesting person, and I think probably a little complex in a way. I mean, she said she, in her regressions, Dr. Simon, that didn't seem like, or at least what I surmise is that she didn't have fear but during the abduction, yet she also blocked it out as a traumatic event. And so what do you think was really going on? Because she had nightmares, she had the panic attack when she saw a group of people by the side of the road. So what was her psychology about the whole event? You know, what was going on?
Well, certainly Betty did experience fear when she and Barney ended up on a dirt logging road and had no idea how they had arrived there. They were suddenly in a new area, not on the road they'd been traveling on. There were tall trees all around, and there were figures standing in the road. And when those figures approached the car, Barney said to Betty, "I think that's them. I think that's the ones I saw on the craft when I was standing in the field." Nice. And she, at that point, began to panic. And she told Dr. Simon that she had never been so frightened in her entire life. Mm-hmm. And they pointed something at her, and she appears to have lost consciousness before she could escape. And then she regained consciousness when she was being taken to the craft, and she fought for her life not to be taken aboard that craft. She did experience trauma, even though it was not as severe as the trauma that Barney experienced mm-hmm. when he was standing in the field. Neither of them were terribly freaked out when they were on board the craft. Betty said that she was frightened by the small one, who was about 3.5 to 4 feet tall, who was standing out in the hallway looking in to the room where she was being examined. She also had a very traumatic experience when Dr. Simon hypnotized her and forced her to relive the examination on the table, where a very long needle was plunged into her abdomen. And he actually had to end the session free of trauma and fear that she was experiencing at that point. Barney, when he was on the craft, chose to keep his eyes closed most of the time, to be cooperative. He was not exhibiting any fear, even during the hypnosis session at that time.
But he did scream. Wasn't there a moment in the hypnotic session where he started screaming, Barney?
Yes, it was. And that was the part for which he had conscious, continuous recall. But he had blocked out the facial characteristics of those non-humans who were looking down at him. Even in his conscious recall, when he was interviewed by Walter Webb, an astronomer from NICAP, in early October of 1961, Barney stated that these beings were, quote, somehow not human. But it was the facial characteristics. And he was standing in that field looking up at these beings, and he could see that they had some kind of a plan. And he believed that plan was to capture him like, quote, a bug in a net. And that is when he developed this mental block for what their facial characteristics looked like. He only knew they were somehow not human. And that is when he went screaming back to the car to Betty to tell her that they had to get out of there or they were going to be captured. He threw the binoculars on the seat of the car and went speeding down the road. That is when he and Betty heard a series of code-like buzzing sounds striking the trunk of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. That is where they later found some magnetic, shiny spots on the trunk. Mm-hmm. And this is just about the time when they lost conscious recall of what happened for a couple of hours. They only knew that they found themselves 35 miles down the road. They remembered the series of buzzing sounds. Betty remembered rolling down the window and looking up, but also she saw was blackness. So that's what Barney was really fearful of. He didn't want to go beyond that point, and he did not want to remember what the facial characteristics of those beings looked like.
But when Betty was on board the ship, it seems from some accounts that she was very relaxed. She was talking to the person in charge or the being in charge. It seemed like she, got information. There was a book. So Betty somehow integrated that traumatic experience a little better than Barney, didn't she?
Well, what happened was that she began to trust the one that she called the leader after he took her pain away when that needle was plunged into her navel. And so the examiner then left the room to examine Barney, and she was left alone with the leader, who we now think of as the escort. This is the one who visits experiencers over and over again throughout their lifetime and establishes a relationship with them.
Could that be male? Did that be male or female, like in the or the opposite sex of the abductee usually?
Well, Betty thought that he was male.
Yeah. And people like Whitley talk about a female sort of host there throughout. So yes. Anyway, that's just an idea. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
And so since Betty lost her fear of him, she asked him where he was from. And this is when he showed her the star map that Marjorie Fish later investigated. She researched it, and she was able to identify the star system that she felt they came from. And also,
just for people listening, that was Zeta Reticuli. The whole idea of Zetas coming here comes from Betty Hill and Marjorie Fish's star map. So yeah, go ahead.
That is correct. Yeah. And also, there was a tablet of sorts that she saw, and an embedded in the screen on this tablet that she could only refer to as a book, but she didn't describe it as looking like a book when she described it to me. But she saw alien text or symbols, and she was able to later reproduce those symbols. And see, Don Derry from McGill University had done a symbol study with experiencers. Betty's symbols at that point were locked in a file cabinet at my house. I had never shown them to anybody, but they were published in Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. Dr. Don Derry saw the symbols there and compared them to the symbols drawn by the experiencers in his study, and they were nearly identical.
Has anyone ever interpreted those symbols?
No one has ever been able to interpret them or decipher what they say.
Oh, are they related to the symbols that James Pendison saw on the craft in the Rendlesham Forest case? Do you know about that?
Yes, but they seem different. There are different alien groups who have different symbols, and I've studied the symbols from different groups. Betty's symbols were of the dot and dash lines and geometric shapes.
I'm just looking at that. Where in the, can you tell me where in Captured that is?
It should be, I believe, in the appendix.
Okay. I'll look, because that's fascinating. So where is that study? Is that study online, the guy who compared all these different symbols of aliens?
I'm not sure. It used to be online. I'm not sure if it still is. And it's in the appendix on page 289.
Okay.
And,
thank you.
Dr. Don Derry has written a book, and he has included information about the symbol study in the book.
Wow. Because I've just been looking at lots of symbols. There's also the Roswell symbols that are out there, too, from that piece of metal that was taken to, what's his name, son's place.
Jesse Marcel.
Yes, Jesse Marcel. There's those symbols out there as well. And I just think, yeah, maybe there are different symbols from different races. And I'm just curious. They must say something, you know. Betty said she thought about this her whole every day of her life.
Yes.
Did she think ultimately it was a positive experience, or was, you know, what was going on for her, did you feel?
Well, in the end, when she was under hospice care, I lived with Betty to take care of her. We did a lot of talking about her reflections upon that experience, and she thought of it as being a positive experience because it gave her the opportunity to meet astronauts from other planets and also to meet scientists who were very interested in her experience. And she said that she would never have had the opportunity to meet them if she had not had this experience. And in the end, they didn't harm her. They didn't harm Barney. They actually apologized for frightening them in the beginning. So she did not think that there was anything mean or evil about these beings. She had a positive view of them.
Right. But there are, you know, a lot of people who are, trauma seems to be a part of it just because they're so different, not made intentionally, but they don't understand, the aliens themselves don't understand how traumatic such an encounter can be. And of course, when Dr. Benjamin Simon, who was an expert in trauma, originally met Benny and Barney Hill, he said this was a very severe case of what was called combat fatigue or, you know, post-traumatic stress. So, you know, is that still seems to be going on. We still have yet to integrate somehow into the human psyche these encounters. How do you think we can make it easier for people?
Well, I think that there are different types of experiences that people have depending upon the beings. And some of these beings are more positive and insightful into human behavior and sympathetic than other races of beings who might induce more trauma, might abuse humans, might not have the respect for humans that other races have. So I think that we have to look at the type of experience that people are having. And it seems to me that the more a person can learn about what is actually occurring and the reasons for it, the better. I think that the initial reason for trauma is that you're sleeping comfortably in your bed and all of a sudden something is in your room and they're lifting you. And I mean, a lot of experiencers actually feel their fingers underneath their bodies as they're putting them back. No one has given permission for this as far as they can remember. Of course, some people say that, well, they gave permission before they came into this life, but they certainly don't remember that in this lifetime. And they usually only remember that when they have undergone hypnosis. So, go ahead.
No, but there is still something within the human psyche that reacts to things that are different, you know, because we've been trained. This is sort of what I've been writing about. We have a cultural mindset about what is possible and what is not possible. And if we meet things that are outside this culture that tells us what is true and not true, that's what John Mack called ontological shock, or the shock of reality being different than what we think it is. So I wonder, is there a way that as the work of like contact and your work gets out there, that perhaps that kind of shock will lessen? Do you feel that?
I think that it will lessen. Of course, when Betty and Barney and the earlier experiences were taken, they did experience ontological shock because they believed that this was impossible, and you know, suddenly it happened. So it's natural to undergo a huge emotional reaction to this sort of thing. But as we learn more and more about this, and it becomes more and more publicly available, then at least people have the opportunity to know about it. And we have more and more support groups now as well for experiencers. We know that there are thousands of people, maybe hundreds of thousands of people around the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's the purpose of meetings or these conferences, especially like Contact in the Desert, where we might have 3,000 to 4,000 people coming together.
Yes.
And I'm also part of a group called the Disclosure Activists, which puts information out there. And of course, I heard you're on the free board or connected to that organization.
Yes, free. I am on the board of directors.
Well, this is exciting. It's still, I mean, you grew up with this, but still, when I think about it, and maybe even my own experience, it still feels strange, doesn't it? Or maybe not to you because you've been around, but it's still like, I think, is this really possible? What, and if it is, how come everyone doesn't know about it? You know, it's still outside my belief system, even though I do, of course, believe it.
Well, you know, it is a difficult thing because it has not been made public. It has been debunked. There's been a lot of disinformation about it. And I think that it presents a national security problem. Mm-hmm. And that is why it has been debunked. And in my latest book, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers, Stanton Friedman and I present documented evidence that has never been presented before on the history of all of this, on the government cover-up, who was behind it, and the reasons why. And we also have a chapter on disclosure. I think that one of the problems that we have, and there are many reasons why the government isn't disclosing this, mm-hmm. but one of them is that their job is to protect the American people. And they cannot protect the American people from contact because militarily they certainly cannot do it. These beings are capable of shutting down our nuclear silos. Mm-hmm. There are nuclear weapons. There's nothing that they can do to prevent people from being abducted. But I think that it's a good thing that more and more people are coming to view it as not an abduction, but as contact or as an experience that they have had. And more people are coming to realize that it's not all as negative as we once thought it was. Certainly, I have to repeat that some people, especially those who are having MILAB experiences, are having negative experiences. But in all of the hypnosis sessions that I have ever done with individuals, no one has come out feeling traumatized after the session. They have viewed it in a much more positive light than they ever had. And probably that is because these non-humans are telling them, we care about you. We don't want to frighten you. We're not going to hurt you. You're part of our family. But they're viewing it in that light.
But Barney was quite traumatized, maybe not Betty, but Barney seemed to be, you know, unable to really integrate that experience in that way. Right?
Only know. In his conscious mind.
Right.
And when he was on the craft, he said that he thought that those non-humans were capable of harming him if he were to fight back. And so he had to lie very quietly and be complacent and just let them do what they wanted to do for that reason. But he was not harmed in the end. Except for emotionally, of course.
Yes, poor Barney. He had ulcers and nightmares. But do you think that, or it seems to me that the abduction scenario, the whole idea of abductions being, it seems to be less and less. That's my theory. It seems like they've gotten the genetic information that they've needed when they have done abductions, and it seems like another phase of that is happening. Do you find that to be true?
I do find that to be true. And when I look at the current studies that are being done by organizations like FREE, and that's only the raw data that they've released at this point. It's not the scientific study. Mm-hmm. But based upon the raw data, there appear to be fewer and fewer people who are undergoing invasive examinations.
Are there still anybody? Because I don't really hear of anyone like I did in the 80s or 90s that they may be remembering stuff that happened in the past, but I haven't heard, and maybe it's, you know, it's still happening, that people are still being abducted in that way. Have you heard of that recently?
No, I have not heard of that recently. It's always about what has happened in the past that has bothered people. More recently, people are receiving upgrades physically. There is communication, and people are appear to be treated in a much more favorable manner than they were years ago, except for by the Millabs the reptilians.
Are there? I don't have any experience with the Milabs. That's the military but I don't know if that's even true. The Milab stuff. Can you talk about what Milab? What people mean by that?
What people mean by that is that the military, these black ops military secret group of nasty grays and maybe reptilians too, and they come and they take people to an underground base and they conduct horrible, painful experiments on them, and maybe they're raped if they're women, and you know, it sounds really horrible, and it occurs to only a tiny percentage of individuals based upon the current studies that have been done.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't those just be ETs disguised as military that are doing that? Or maybe possibly working, of course, with the black ops. But I don't know. I haven't run across that I've heard people talk about it, but I haven't run across that too much.
Yes, well, I have, and I've asked people, well, what uniform did you see? What branch of the military was this? And almost no one can even give me a branch of the military. So, you know, it's all very perplexing. Are these actually some kind of nefarious aliens? What actually is going on? We don't know.
But what you said before I find very interesting is that people are not necessarily having abduction experience, or their contact. Like, I think the whole human race has, in a sense, been upgraded on some level, and people are having more telepathic communications. I'm meeting people who seem to be getting downloads.
Yes, and I do too.
Grant Cameron's written that great book about, or his articles about, downloads and influences in music. And I think it feels like we're getting ready for a much more broader, wide open acceptance of this cosmic contact.
Well, I hope that this is true and that this does occur. Many people are receiving downloads or telepathic communication talking about raising human consciousness, increasing the level of spirituality so that we will not destroy this planet, that this is what is necessary. And it appears to be a lot of expression of this sort of thing to experiencers, concern about this planet and our ultimate survival.
You know, I just want to go back to Betty and Barney Hill for a second, because when they went to see Dr. Benjamin Simon, of course, he had no ideas this stuff was happening. It seemed like from the introduction to Interrupted Journey, he didn't quite believe that this really happened. He felt this was their experience, but he didn't. Did he deny the fact that such a thing was possible? I'm not sure what his point of view was.
Well, his point of view was that his personal belief system told him that it was scientifically impossible for aliens to travel in craft to this planet. Mm-hmm. So that was his own personal bias. And so he went into the hypnosis session with that bias, and it's apparent on the hypnosis tapes. Mm-hmm. But he also, in the end, tried to temper that bias by saying he needed to leave that up to the scientific community to determine if it was a real abduction or not. And he tried to convince Betty and Barney that it wasn't, but they had physical evidence. They had their conscious continuous recall. There was a lot that was not brought out for the first time in those hypnosis sessions. How do you reconcile that with somebody saying that they thought that it was impossible?
Right. So So did you ever meet Dr. Simon? I mean, what was his...
Yes, I did.
And what was, I mean, in the long run after the case and, you know, years later, what was his thoughts about that case?
Well, he was very reticent in his expression of his thoughts until 1975, when the UFO incident starring James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons was a made-for-television movie. And when that was about to be aired, he received a home visit from Philip Klass, the well-known debunker.
Right.
And Klass went to his house and talked to him about how this was going to be presented to millions of people, his take on all of this. Dr. Simon also needed to think about his reputation and how his legacy would be carried down in history. And that's when Dr. Simon, for the first time, went on a radio show. It was the Larry Glick Show. Mm-hmm. And he stated that although he believed in the truthfulness of Betty's and Barney's statements, it was difficult for him to believe, or impossible for him to believe, that aliens were actually visiting us from another planet.
Hmm.
So that was basically what his statement was. And so he had to make a public statement that he did not believe it was real.
Hmm. What was he like when you met him, though?
He seemed quite authoritarian. Mm-hmm. I was about 18 years old when I met him. I was invited to have dynner at his house. Alan Hynek was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with Betty and Barney. And he seemed nice, but a little bit distant to me, not really a warm and engaging kind of person, but he was warm toward my aunt and uncle.
What was your connection with Alan Hynek? You dropped out for a second.
Alan Hynek?
Yeah. What was your...
Yes. Alan Hynek seemed quite nice at the time. He engaged me in conversation more so than Ben Simon did.
So, at the contact in the desert where you'll be speaking, what will you be focusing on mostly in your presentations this year?
Okay, I have two different presentations. My lecture is going to be on my book, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers, the history of government involvement in the cover-up, who was involved in it, a little bit about disclosure. And how that was all carried out.
Is that book out right now? Is it coming out?
Yes. Oh. Yes, it was released in September. And I'm very proud of it. It's based upon years of archival research that Stanton Friedman and I have done, based upon a lot of correspondence files. And we think that it's a real gem, because there's been a lot of speculation about what might have been going on, but no one had ever written about the factual data.
Oh, I'd love a copy of that.
Factual data.
I'd love to get a copy of that book, because I have a great...
Yes.
Okay.
Well, autographed copies are available on my website at kathleen-marden.com, and it's also available in many different formats on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Okay, great. And your other lecture is going to be about what?
It is going to be about perplexing phenomena. Pardon me. My tongue is getting twisted this morning.
Oh.
Perplexing phenomena related to contact. So it's going to be about those things that most UFO investigators want to ignore, such as the psychic part of it, the paranormal part of it, that all seems to be related and is prevalent in a very high percentage of cases.
Mm.
In fact, according to the commonality study that Denise Stoner and I did in 2012, 88% stated that they observe paranormal phenomena in their homes that was related to contact.
Well, oh, so does Jacques Vallée observe that as well. I mean, he's quite a presence in the in this paranormal UFO related studies.
Yes.
So paranormal activity is seems to definitely be involved with these UFOs, but what's really going on, do you think, in this paranormal? What do you guess is going on with these ETs? How do you make sense of paranormal activity within?
Well, I think it has to do with their ability to travel between dimensions. Mm-hmm. It has to do with dimensional membranes and their ability to pass through solid surfaces. For example, I believe that some of this is the result of, and what the example I give is that when you open your door to invite a guest in, the flies come in as well.
Right.
So I think that some of these paranormal kind of interdimensional creatures might be able to slip in. Mm-hmm. But I also suspect, and I've been told this over and over again, that the extraterrestrials seem to be able to insert their consciousness into a ball of light, that they can separate the consciousness from their physical bodies, and that they do this in order not to be as frightening to humans. So you might see the ball of light that might end up becoming and a little gray, for example.
Right. I mean, there's other paranormal activities where people have seen, you know, ghosts or actually strange coincidences and men in black, of course. These are all part of a paranormal phenomena that I don't think we have yet to understand, because we don't understand really who these ETs are, and we don't even understand who we are. I think this is the big problem that the situation that we're in now, because to really get what's going on, and Whitley talks about this in his last book, Supernatural, we have to reevaluate our capabilities as human beings. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do agree with that. And I have a huge interest in quantum holographic universe theory. And that is something that the scientists at FREE are working on still.
Well, I know you have to go. I could talk to you for hours because you're such an important historic link and historian on the subject, and you're very... you know, you're very clear-headed. You're not making any outrageous claims, and you're basing your, you know, information on things that you've studied and known about. And I think it's a very important, sober approach to the subject.
I think that's very important. And I have a background in social science, and I think that that has helped to shape my scientific investigation of all of this. So I have clearly delineated lines that I won't pass. I won't go beyond the evidence into a lot of speculation.
Right. And I'm really happy you're coming back to Contact. Do you enjoy it out there?
Yes, and I'm looking forward to being there again this year.
Yeah, great. So what's your website, and how can people reach you?
It's Kathleen, Kathleen Marden, MARDEN.com.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a new book you're working on?
I do, but I'm only doing research on it right now, and it will touch upon all of this paranormal phenomena that is being reported.
Well, great. I'd love to show you my book when I complete it as well, because I love your feedback about that.
Yes, I would love to read it.
Thanks. Well, thank you so much, Kathleen, for just taking the time. I know you're busy. I look forward to seeing you at Contact. And one more thing. How's Stanton Friedman doing?
Stanton is doing well. I'm going to see him this weekend. We're both flying into Puebla, Mexico to speak at a college down there.
great. I mean, he is a national treasure, Stanton Friedman, you know?
He is. And I hope we keep him for a very long time.
How old is he now?
He is 82 years old. He'll be 83 in July.
I think I saw him in my college in 1974 talking about UFOs are real, you know? So I'm glad he's
been at it for a very long time, over 50 years now.
Amazing. Of course, he was responsible for really the resurgence of the Roswell information. So,
yes,
just the whole history of the UFO investigation is something that should be commended, you know, something that people have persisted in despite the ridicule. I think it's very brave and an important part of American history.
It is very important, and you have to be courageous to do this, and not to be too worried about what critics think about you, or you know, you might be intimidated into stopping. But it's important to continue. Because this is an exploration for factual information that will help humanity.
Absolutely. It's for humanity. But the government never approached you and said stop. Did you ever have contact with government?
I had two contacts. One after I wrote Captured, I received a phone call from a man who identified himself as working for intelligence and said, we like what you and Friedman did. Don't like what you do, we'll let you know. And they did let me know. After I wrote The Alien Abduction Files with Denise Stoner, I was approached and told that they did not like what I did and that it would frighten people and that I should not do that again.
Wow, that's who are these people saying this?
Well, this was a man who approached me at a conference. The Navy was at that conference at a hotel, and he was dressed in plain clothing. He made some veiled threats. He asked a lot of questions. He seemed to know a lot about me.
Wow.
And when I asked him who he was, all he did was say military.
Wow. Oh, one more question. What do you think of the Tom DeLonge possible disclosure or interactions?
I'm concerned that he might have received disinformation from the military. As you know, other people who have been researchers throughout history have received disinformation in an attempt to discredit them. And so I'm concerned that he might also be the recipient of disinformation.
Right. But being approached by these people hasn't stopped you at all. It didn't scare you, did it?
I went in a different direction because I had family to think about.
Oh.
I didn't want anyone to be harmed. So alien abduction or contact, negative or frightening things. I wrote Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers. And then I think my interests have also developed in a different direction where I'm looking at the more positive side of contact and on the paranormal side of it as well.
It's such a complex situation with the paranormal, with the history of abductions, with, you know, ongoing contact, that of course the government, I think, doesn't really know what to do. And so what do you think the best approach is at this point for disclosure?
I think that it has to come very, very slowly. I think that abductions have to stop. That, you know, contact can occur where it is desirable among experiencers, but the American public and the world public, for that matter, has to be reassured that this is not harmful and that basically that it is not harmful, that we have nothing to fear. That is the important thing.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate your time. I look forward to seeing you. Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you too. And it was a pleasure speaking with you again.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too.
I've been talking to Kathleen Martin, who will be one of the keynote speakers at the upcoming Contact in the Desert conference in Joshua Tree, California, May 19th to the 22nd, 2017. There'll be lots of other amazing speakers there, including Richard Dolan, Linda Moulton Howe, J.J. Hertog, Desiree Hertog, and Stephen Greer will be there. And just go to the Contact in the Desert website. I'm very happy that Kathleen will be there. She is one of the, I think, really important people in the history of UFOs, the historical record. So come down. I'll be there along with thousands of other people. I'll be moderating one of the stages, hosting and emceeing. So look forward to seeing you all there. If you have any questions, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. You can also go to my website, newrealities.com, and I welcome any comments, feedback, and we'll be doing more in this series as we prepare for Contact in the Desert. Thank you for listening, and good night.